That doesn't help my state of mind. I'm overthinking this. My mind is playing tricks on me, and my heart isn't getting the message. A trip to the library sounds like just what I need. Silence, solitude, and the friendly company of books will clear my head. After I freshen up, I call a taxi to drop me off near Bryant Park. I walk across the manicured grass, between the great stone lions guarding the New York Public Library, and into a breathtaking literary cathedral. The scent of old paper embraces me. Room upon room and shelves upon shelves of books stretch out on all sides. For a long while, I just wander the stacks and reading rooms in peaceful awe, admiring the beautiful architecture and the combined wisdom of centuries. I could spend the rest of my life reading here and never finish even half their collection. It's incredible, and I'm at a loss about where to start. I decide to just stroll around the literary fiction section and pick up whatever catches my eye. With relish, I read snippets from all the new titles I've heard good reviews for, but haven't gotten around to evaluating for myself. After a while, though, I realize I'm still antsy, which in turn frustrates me. I have hours to kill in one of the world's grandest libraries, damn it. I should feel like a kid in a candy store. But my thoughts keep turning back to Emmett, especially that moment in our hotel room earlier when he stopped himself from kissing me. It only heightens the anxiety that was already building around our relationship. What do I feel for him, and is it the same as he feels for me? I shake my head. No, it doesn't matter. Our lives don't fit together, period, end of story. Acknowledging this rift out loud would, at best, make it impossible to go on without making changes that I'm not ready for. At worst, it would bring everything crashing down and drive away the man I'm finding it harder and harder to imagine my days without. But that awareness of how precarious our situation is only lends a desperate edge to my craving. I find myself glancing away from the book in my hand and to my watch every 20 minutes or so, looking forward to the time I'll have him all to myself again. On a mission, I put the book back into its rightful place and turn to leave. I've decided that when he comes back to our hotel room, I want him to find me waiting there. Arching up off the mattress, my feet braced on Emmett's sturdy shoulders, I squirm and moan for more as his tongue flickers over my clit and his skilled fingers massage tirelessly inside me. What we're doing doesn't make sense. Oral sex won't accomplish the reason we started meeting up in the first place. But neither of us comments on that obvious truth. We're just enjoying ourselves and dancing around the elephant in the room, trying not to burst this bubble of unspoken tension. At least, that's why I'm keeping my mouth shut. But while it might just be my oversexed imagination, I sense that he's doing the same. When we got back to the hotel room after dinner, I pounced on him, yanking his pants down and hungrily sucking him off until he almost emptied himself into my mouth. Only Emmett thought to stop us, to make sure he ejaculated inside me. And boy, did he. The memory of his deep groan is enough to send me hurtling to the edge. I throw my head back with a wild cry. Despite everything, despite myself, my time with Emmett is still a blessed vacation from my life. His touch transforms me into a wanton, greedy creature of desire. Just a female animal in heat with no past or future. No worries or shame or overthinking. No bullshit about work. Just the pure, simple pleasure of the moment. With a desperate moan, I tip over the edge, my body spasming around his fingers in wave after blissful wave.
"So beautiful when you come," he says.
Emmett rises and situates us in the bed together. We lie down on our sides facing each other. We share a leisurely, sated kiss, enjoying the sensation of our lips lightly brushing. We part, and for a moment, time pauses while our gazes linger on each other. He brushes a stray hair from my face with a smile that skewers my heart. Emmett looks so tender. I almost tell him how much he means to me. But no, that wouldn't do anyone any good. He made his feelings clear from day one. He doesn't have the time or desire for a girlfriend, let alone a family. I shove away the terrible, foolish idea, and it feels like I'm ripping away something inside me along with it. We turn off the bedside lamps and snuggle down under the covers together. I curl up with my head on his chest, basking in his warmth and the sense of security he always radiates. I hotly anticipated 3 nights of sex with Emmett. What I didn't count on was the fact that I'd spend those nights sleeping in his arms, too. Just like the wedding we went to? I love it. And hate it. I crave this intimacy so badly, despite knowing that it's a stupid impulse to give in to if I want to avoid getting attached. But maybe it's too late. Maybe I'm already attached, and the best I can do now is let myself enjoy this while it lasts. His hand gently stroking my hair soothes the ache in my chest. But I know that it isn't gone, only retreated, waiting for the next time I'm alone with my thoughts. I clench my eyes shut, as if I could block out the truth along with my tears, and let his heartbeat lull me to sleep.
Chapter 16. Emmett. It's the last full day of our New York trip, and I'm torn. On the one hand, I'm grateful to be almost done with these stupid meetings, because I was sick of them about 5 seconds after the first one began. But it also means that Jenna and I will soon have to part ways again. I try not to think about the moment that this arrangement will be over for good, but it's coming closer and closer no matter what. When she's finally knocked up and doesn't need me anymore, I don't know what I'll do. The meetings drag on until I start to wonder if someone sabotaged all the clocks in the room. Finally, the representatives from the distribution company rise to their feet and say goodbye, and I tear out of there like my ass is on fire. I head back to the hotel and walk into our room with a weary sigh of relief. Thank Christ that's all over. You have no idea how glad I am to be back. Jenna looks up from the vanity mirror where she sits with her hairbrush in hand. I stop to admire the view she so generously treated me to. She's wearing heeled boots and a long suede skirt in deference to the crisp weather, but her top half is adorned with only a lacy black bra. She quirks her eyebrow at me, smirking ever so slightly. I take it you like what you see? I always do. I lean against the wall and flash her a lewd grin. Don't stop on my account. Go on, I'll just enjoy the show. She finishes brushing her hair and picks up one of the many makeup jars and palettes scattered in front of her. As you can see, I'm running late getting ready for dinner. I tilt my head. You do your hair before putting on your shirt? I left it for last so I wouldn't get makeup all over it. Women do that. She starts brushing beige powder all over her face. It makes sense. I just never would have thought of it on my own. I've seen plenty of women dressing or undressing, but never readying themselves for a date. I realize that I kind of like seeing Jenna this way. It feels oddly intimate, domestic. After I've watched her put on blush, eyeshadow, and lipstick, I ask, "Where do you want to go tonight?" If you don't care, I was thinking steak. I'm in the mood for seared cow, and I feel like treating Jenna to something upscale. "Steak sounds great. Do you know a good place?" She blinks as she carefully applies mascara. Not really, but we can ask the front desk. She stands up. There, I'm done. Sorry for the wait. She leans toward the bed to pick up a dark red blouse. Wait. I cross the room and reach out to caress her breasts through her bra. She sucks in her breath almost too quietly for me to hear. Almost. Hey. I bend down to kiss first one breast, then the other, and straighten up to peck her on the cheek, careful not to smudge her makeup. All right, I'm satisfied. Until later tonight. She laughs, though her cheeks are a little pinker than before. Okay, horn dog, I'm putting the boobs away now. She shrugs into the blouse and buttons it up. After asking the concierge for a recommendation, we get into a cab and head to what he claimed was the best steakhouse in the area. We both order bacon-wrapped filet mignon medallions and quickly absorb ourselves with flirting, debating about books and movies, and retelling funny anecdotes from our younger years. I love the way her sharp tongue and even sharper wit keep me on my toes. The waiter's return barely breaks our stride. We keep chatting and laughing as we eat, completely comfortable together. Jenna always has a way of lifting the weight off me, and by the time we've finished our meal, the stress from work has drained away. All I needed was some good company, good food, and easy conversation. Well, maybe this isn't everything I need. I definitely plan to follow up on that flirting in bed tonight. As I polish off my last bite of tender beef, I ask, "Have you enjoyed the trip?" She nods with a bright smile. "Definitely. Everything's been great. The library, museums, the hotel spa." She makes a little noise of pleasure at that last one. I was happy to pamper her. She'll be pregnant soon and certainly deserves it. And I've worked a little during the day, too, on my laptop and checked in with my assistant and the shop. I nod. "What do you want to do with the rest of our last night?" She considers it. "You've been to New York before, right? Surprise me." I rub my chin. "How about we start with dessert? I know a restaurant that sells nothing but artisan cheesecake in little jars." Her eyes light up so dramatically I have to laugh. "Guess I picked the right suggestion," I say, teasing her. She pokes her tongue out at me with a grin. "What are we waiting for?" At the next restaurant, we stuff ourselves silly, sampling all the different flavors. Turtle, blackberry, green tea, lemon ginger, red velvet, and salted caramel apple. Afterward, we visit an art museum where Jenna excitedly points out the Greek, Roman, and Byzantine influences in every painting and sculpture. Then it's off to a speakeasy, where we drink French cocktails and sway together to a live jazz band. Playing the night by ear, we go on a whirlwind adventure through New York City's nightlife, hopping from bar to club to gallery, ending with a leisurely people-watching walk through the city streets as we wind our way back to our hotel. The instant the door clicks shut behind us, I pull her into the bedroom for a hungry kiss. Still devouring her mouth, I unbutton her skirt and let it fall to pool on the floor around her feet. I nudge her backward to sit on the bed, then finally break the kiss to kneel. Too impatient to finish undressing her, I pull aside her panties and dip my head low, inhaling her heady scent before my tongue slips out to taste her. Jenna stifles a groan as she runs her hands through my hair, gripping to hold me in place. I love that groan. My cock strains painfully at my zipper as I slowly lave her clit and tease her opening with my fingertips. Jenna stares down at me, her cheeks red and pupils dilated, captivated by the erotic sight. Then I flick her my tongue in the exact way I've learned drives her wild, and she falls back flat on the bed with a whimper, her hands clutching at my shoulders and head. I suck on her clit and hum, knowing what the vibration will do to her. "Emmett," she cries, her nails scraping along my scalp like she's trying to hold on. I lap at her like I'm dying of thirst, drunk on her sweet honey, unable to get enough of her. Her hips twitch and grind up into the stimulation. Her cries pitch higher, louder, and then suddenly she gasps and her thighs clamp down around my head so hard they quiver. Her pussy pulses rhythmically against my lips and chin. I don't stop licking until she chokes. "Stop! Oh, fuck!" Still breathing hard, she sits up and bends in half to kiss me. In my lust-fogged state, it takes me a second to realize that she's fumbling at her blouse buttons. "Hang on," she mutters. "Screw the shirt, the boots too, just come here." I lie on the bed and lift a half-naked Jenna in my arms. She straddles me, unzips my dress pants, and sinks down on my cock. I groan aloud in ecstasy. As much as I love her mind and spirit, the baser side of me also loves fucking her bare, and I don't know how I'll ever go back to using condoms with the one-night stands I pick up at bars. Jenna rides me hard, pounding me into the mattress, and I buck up to meet her with every plunge. My fingers grip her, helping her move as my thumbs work furiously at the firm, slick bud. Her thighs tremble with exertion and mounting pleasure. I can't get enough of her. In moments like this, everything else falls away. She becomes my whole world, and I want nothing more than to keep her in my bed forever, to make her feel so good she'll never even think about leaving me. My fingers dig bruises into her hips as stars burst white over my vision, and I empty myself inside her. With a little encouragement from my hands, she falls apart a second later, moaning as her inner muscles spasm around me. Slowly, almost reluctantly, she lifts off me, and I feel a pang of loss when the last of my cock slides out. She tugs off the rest of her clothes and lies naked on her side next to me. With a dreamy sigh, she drapes her free arm and leg over me and cuddles close. I don't want to disentangle myself from her, even just for the moment it would take to get undressed. I pull her into a secure embrace, my bliss already tinged with melancholy. Some premonition, some gut instinct warns me that the first month was a fluke and she's sure to become pregnant this time. And then she won't need me anymore. I will have outlived my usefulness at that point. The thought is sobering. My arms tighten around her. The thought of letting Jenna go is intolerable, and I have no idea what I'm going to do. I push away the urge to talk to her about this. There wouldn't be any point. I know there's no solution to be found. No way to make this relationship work. Dragging our incompatibilities out into the open would just pour salt in my wounds. But God, they hurt already. I ache every time I think about her. I lie there in the dark, holding a woman I didn't know I wanted, that I can never have, listening to the soft rhythm of her breath as I try to quiet the doubts starting to swirl through my head.
Chapter 17. Jenna. Work has been hell, with mounting financial problems and the increasingly pushy buyout offers from my competition. But I can't bring myself to care about that right now. The moment of truth, the moment I've been hoping and praying and fretting over for so long, has finally arrived. It's time to see if our efforts have paid off, and I can't stand waiting another second for my doctor's appointment tomorrow afternoon. After work and a trip to the drugstore, I text Emmett. I bought a pregnancy test. I actually bought 3 just to make sure. He replies almost immediately. Don't take it yet. I'll be there in 20 minutes. Since I've waited 6 weeks, or more accurately, my whole life, I decide I can wait another 20 minutes. It's sweet that Emmett's almost as excited about this as I am. I try to read a magazine, give up because I can't focus, and pace rapidly around my apartment until I hear his knock. I open the door and gesture him inside. Thanks for coming. Of course, I wouldn't miss it. He pulls me in for a brief hug, and instantly I feel a little calmer. Are you nervous? I chew on my lip and nod. It should only take a few minutes until I know one way or the other. I'll be right here. He perches on a bar stool in the kitchen with an attentive expression. I'm grateful for his presence, which seems to ground me. Wish me luck. I press a kiss to his cheek and head toward the bathroom. I reread the instructions for the 5th time just to make sure I don't mess this up. Okay, pee in a cup, dip the test's tip in for 5 seconds, remove it, wait 3 minutes. That's easy. I can totally do this. After following the instructions, I set the test on the bathroom counter and remind myself to breathe. The seconds tick past at a glacial rate, but finally, something starts to happen. With maddening slowness, one pink line appears. Then 2. Holy shit, I say out loud. What? Emmett calls, his voice muffled through the door. He sure didn't stay sitting for long, but if he feels even half as keyed up as I do, I can't blame him. Hold on. I rip open the other 2 boxes and use them too. Hey, what's going on in there? The suspense is killing me. Just 1 more minute. I can barely contain myself as I wait for the tests to turn out. Was the first result a mistake? A fluke? But no, the other 2 show double lines too. I fling open the bathroom door, spot Emmett, and throw my arms around his neck in glee. I'm knocked up! His face lights up. Really? You're pregnant? I nod, grinning so hard my cheeks ache. All 3 tests were positive, I squeal when he sweeps me into his arms with a sound of joy and twirls me around. We pepper each other with kisses, ecstatically bear-hugging, laughing in sheer excitement. He sighs, looking into my eyes with tender pride. We actually did it. How do you feel? We did. I plant a firm kiss on his lips, tears brimming in my eyes. And I feel incredible. When my stomach ruins the moment with a gurgle, he chuckles.
What about hungry?
I laugh. I'm not eating for two yet.
I asked about you, not the baby,
he says.
I worry about you sometimes. Knowing your workaholic tendencies, I'm guessing you haven't eaten dinner yet.
You calling me a workaholic? Do I even have to say pot, kettle, black? I poke the tip of my tongue out at him. But you got me there. No, I haven't. I came straight home from work to take these tests. We order a Chinese food feast and spread our army of paper boxes over the little dining table in my kitchen. As we dig in, silence falls. And with it creeps a slow melancholy that tempers the joy of my success. Now what? The question nudges insistently. But how will he answer if I ask? Emmett promised me he didn't want any part in raising a child, and said he'll happily get out of my way once I'm pregnant. Hell, at the beginning, that's exactly what I asked him to do. We were once on the same page, but since then my feelings have drifted so far. I still don't know if I can handle a serious relationship. Yet, at the same time, now that I'm about to lose him, I realize just how desperately I wish otherwise. I try to push away my unspoken, unspeakable doubts and make small talk. But it's half-hearted, and Emmett answers in monosyllables, clearly preoccupied. Eventually I give up, and we eat our chicken chow mein in silence. When the takeout boxes are empty, I crack open my fortune cookie. "Enjoy the good luck a companion brings you," I read aloud. "That's accurate. You've definitely brought me luck." He gives me a half-smile that seems oddly tense. "Glad to hear it. What did you get?" He opens his cookie and frowns at the tiny paper slip.
"A dream you have will come true. Well, that's vague as hell."
Then, looking away from me, he says,
"It's getting late. I guess I should get out of your hair."
What can I say except, "All right." As I walk him to the door, our eyes meet and I hesitate. "Don't go," teeters on the tip of my tongue. Maybe a quick formal farewell is the right thing to do, but I can't bring myself to leave things at that. If this is my last chance to touch Emmett, I'll never forgive myself if I don't take it. I lean up to kiss him goodbye for the last time, wrapping my arms around his solid shoulders and breathing in the scent of his crisp cologne. A small noise of surprise escapes him before his arms close around me tight and his hand cradles the back of my head. For a long moment, I linger, savoring the feel of his lips, his solid body, trying to imprint it into my memory so I'll never forget, so I can carry at least that small piece of him with me. He pulls away slowly, as if he too feels reluctant to part. He takes a breath.
If you want to keep me posted about how the baby is doing, how you're doing with the pregnancy, I would like that.
Oh, I blink, then smile. Okay, I will. I watch him walk away down the hall. Only when the elevator closes behind him do I shut my door. I turn out the lights, brush my teeth, and change into pajamas. Then I lie down in bed, stroking my still flat belly, wondering what the future holds and how I'll fare as a mother, and how it will feel to let go of Emmett, the father of my unborn baby. Damn it, this is stupid. I've done exactly what I set out to accomplish. My hard-won success has finally arrived. So why can't my heart get with the program? Why, under all my excitement and nervousness and pride, do I feel so down? I know why. But I still try to convince myself that my weird mood is just a standard case of pregnancy jitters. As I snuggle under the covers, I place the call I've been waiting to make for a long time. "Hey, Mom," I say when she answers.
"Tell me some good news, baby girl."
"You're going to be a grandma," I say, my throat tight. When she lets out the biggest squeal of joy I've ever heard, tears spring to my eyes. We talk for a while longer, all about baby names and birthing plans, until the conversation shifts to the sperm donor I chose. I don't know how to tell her about Emmett. Don't know how to explain him and his role at all. Yes, he was my donor, but he feels like more. Instead, I make an excuse about needing to get ready for bed and end the call. A ding interrupts my conflicting thoughts. I check my phone to find a text from Emmett.
Make sure not to eat any raw fish from now on. I'm sure you already knew that, but just saying.
My lips twitch up. Of course, I reply. Another text appears almost instantly.
And don't sleep on your back.
That's not until I'm much further along, I type back, my smile growing. Yet another message.
Did your doctor recommend you take any prenatal vitamins?
He keeps texting me little tips and factoids and questions until it gets so late I have to say goodnight. I turn off my phone and snuggle under the covers, feeling a little more cheerful. Even if we're not sleeping together anymore, maybe I won't have to say goodbye to his friendship after all.
Chapter 18. Emmett. It's been 2 weeks since Jenna's pregnancy tests came out positive. 2 weeks since we were together. And I'm slowly but surely losing my damn mind. I'm pretty sure half of my staff is ready to quit with how on edge and snappy I've been. Although I'm dying to see her, I have no convenient excuse to call, now that we've succeeded at the entire reason we started sleeping together. I would have to come out and admit that I just want to be near her and ask if she wants that too. And I already know that leap of faith wouldn't end anywhere happy. We're both so independent. We'd probably never work, yet I'm having a hard time remembering why. But damn, I can't deal with this much longer. I can't even seem to relieve tension by myself. At some point, I realize that if she doesn't need me to have a high sperm count anymore, my dick belongs to me again. That I can go back to jacking off whenever I want. But the first time I tried, I ended up stopping after a few half-hearted minutes because it wasn't any fun, and I haven't bothered with it since. I don't want to use my own hand, alone in an empty penthouse. What I want is Jenna, but she's slipping further away by the day. Trying to convince myself that she still needs me, that our connection doesn't need to be broken just yet, I started obsessively researching pregnancy. I ordered books online and had them shipped to me overnight. I read medical articles and mommy blogs in my office while I was supposed to be working. What started as an attempt to quiet my neurosis soon backfired, though, because I became genuinely terrified of all the dangers lurking in pregnancy. Jesus Christ! I'm perched on my sofa after work, my eyes glued to my latest purchase, speed-reading a litany of blood-curdling hazards. Gestational diabetes, pre-eclampsia, early labor, infections, 1,000 other potential complications. No wonder died in childbirth is such a cliche of old tragic stories. How the fuck has the human species survived this long when there are so many things that can go horribly wrong with reproducing? I force myself to put the book down and try to calm my breathing. This is only driving me further down the rabbit hole than I already am. She's perfectly healthy, I tell myself firmly. Hell, I'll prove it. I grab my phone and text Jenna. Are you feeling well? There. I'll hear straight from the horse's mouth if anything is wrong, but there definitely won't be, so I have no reason to lose my marbles. I can't sit still. I pace around my living room until she replies, I'm fine. Shit. That was the exact response I hoped for, but it doesn't calm me down at all. I text her back. Are you sure? Any pain, nausea, fatigue, cravings? I can swing by the store later if you want me to pick something up. Some distant part of my mind whispers that I'm acting like a lunatic and I need to back off, but I can't stop myself. No, I promise, she replies. I'm totally fine. Relax, Emmett. I can just picture her expression right now, amused with a touch of gentle exasperation. See? I say out loud. You heard the lady. Chill out. Then my phone buzzes again. Except... The bottom drops out of my stomach. Except what? What is it? I rush to type back. A minute, then... Never mind, it's no big deal. I almost let out a hysterical laugh. Holy shit, she can't just backpedal on me like that. Please tell me what's wrong before I have a panic attack. I type frantically, correcting a myriad of typos as I go. Sorry, didn't mean to worry you. It's just, You've obviously been doing some research. Did you come across anything about increased libido during pregnancy? I stare at her words for a moment, reading them over and over to make sure I understand what she's asking. Then I close the message and call her. I can't handle this conversation through text. I need to hear her voice, not to mention talk without anxiety-inducing pauses between every sentence while I await a response. As soon as she picks up, I answer her question. I did see mentions of that, actually. Oh, thank God, she sighs. I'm so horny and I thought I was losing my mind, but I guess this is just normal. Huh, I mutter. It seems a little early for that symptom to appear. I thought it wasn't supposed to start until late in the first trimester. But everything I've read says that every pregnancy is a little different, and this doesn't seem dangerous. I'm sure as hell not complaining about the chance to touch her again. I thought that door had closed 2 weeks ago, and here I am standing right in front of it again. She needs me, but not for my sperm this time. That ship has sailed. She needs my dick for much bigger reasons, possibly 9 months of bigger reasons. My dick is very happy at this turn of events. Huh? What? She asks. Nothing. My mood much improved, I say. I was just thinking I know exactly how to help with your little problem. Hell, I can drive over right now if you want. Is that a good idea? She sounds uncertain. Shouldn't we keep our distance? Fuck that. Listen, if you're mentioning it to me, I'm guessing that masturbation isn't doing it for you anymore, right? No, she admits quietly. So you need a man, and I'm well qualified for the job. I mean, we know we work well together. Besides, I'm not about to let you go off around the city picking up strangers who will do God knows what to you and the baby. It's a safety issue, really. That concern isn't a complete lie. I'm just not mentioning my other two motivations. The overwhelming desire to see her and touch her again, and the idea of her fucking another man makes my blood boil. I know that knocking you up was all we explicitly talked about, but it's also my job to make sure you get the baby you want. So, protecting you both comes with the territory. I resist the urge to add, and this is my baby too. That's not what we agreed to. That's not what it says on all the legal paperwork we signed. My baby was never part of the legalese. It was always her child. But that knowledge, that biological reality, nevertheless draws me in with irresistible force. She pauses for so long, I start wondering if my phone lost signal. All right, she replies at last, and there's a softness in her voice that does strange things to my insides. Are you sure you don't mind? I almost bark out a laugh. Mind? Getting another chance to have sex with her? She's obviously already suffering from pregnancy brain. Not at all. Then come on over, big boy, and I'll put you to good use. I hustle to the car so fast I almost forget my keys. At her apartment, she answers my knock right away. She looks tired, is wearing stained sweatpants and a baggy t-shirt, and all I can think is, God, how can a woman be so beautiful? How have I stayed away from her so long? Is this the pregnancy glow, or am I just a smitten fool? And most importantly, what the hell was I about to say? Hey, she says, her voice soft. Jenna's messy ponytail makes her look even younger, and I have to physically resist the urge to cup the back of her neck and use it to pull her in for a kiss. How are you feeling? I ask, stepping inside as she closes the door behind me. Good. Great, actually. Her lips twitch with a smile, and God, it's so fucking good to see her. I pull a small plastic bottle out of my coat pocket. I bought you these prenatal vitamins from the drugstore. The books I've been reading said you should start take later. Come here. And she yanks me by the lapels into a ravenous kiss that makes up for every lonely moment of the last 2 weeks. Jenna flops back onto the pillow with a sigh of exhausted satisfaction. Phew. I really needed that. Me too, I don't say. Glad I could lend a hand, I smirk at her, and a tongue and several other body parts. Shut up, she says with a chuckle. She scoots over to rest her head on my chest, her arm draped over my waist, and for a long, blissful while, I just stroke the soft skin of her back and listen to her quiet murmurs of pleasure. I haven't felt so relaxed and content since the last time we shared a bed. Just when I think she's fallen asleep, she mumbles, "Hey, do you want to order a pizza?" Come to think of it, I haven't had dinner yet. I was too engrossed in reading, and then in rushing over here so I could make Jenna scream. "I could eat. Anywhere you're in the mood for?" She makes a noncommittal noise. "Doesn't really matter to me. Whatever's open at this hour we'll have to do." I really don't feel like letting go of Jenna. How about Mama Joe's? Sounds good to me. Who's going to be the one to put on pants to answer the door? I laugh. I'll do it. "But that means I have to stop lying on you," she points out. Shit, you're right. I ponder. "Well, we have until the pizza gets here, and then you can get right back on me again." I call the pizza place, order a large pepperoni with mushrooms, and bring it back for us to eat in bed once it's delivered. After we've polished off a slice, Jenna says, "So, getting together tonight turned out to be a great idea. You want to keep doing this? For as long as I'm able to, that is." I suppress the urge to fist pump and holler hell yes, opting instead to reply as casually as I can manage. "If it helps you, of course I do." I know this only pushes our relationship's expiration date out a little further, but still, there are no words to describe how relieved and happy I am for this stay of execution. Hopefully, Jenna will continue to enjoy my company for the next 8 months. We eat and chat about nothing, just like old times, until the box is half empty and neither of us can fit another slice in our stomach. When I come back from putting the leftovers in her fridge, I find that Jenna has fallen asleep sitting up. I stifle a laugh. She must have been worn out. I hope I can take that as a compliment to my sex skills, because the alternative is that she's been working way too hard. Careful not to wake her, I tug the blanket up over her and turn off the light. Then I just gaze at her peaceful face for a few moments, unable to force myself to walk away. Of course, all the books I've read said that the first trimester is the most exhausting with hormones and a baby growing inside her, but I'll let her sleep with the knowledge that I sexed her so good and that's why she's fast asleep. But I don't want to leave. I want to fall asleep holding her in my arms, wake up with her beside me, maybe get breakfast together if there's time before work. But she didn't specifically invite me to stay the night, and even though we've already shared a hotel bed a few nights, sleeping over at her place feels like crossing a more significant line. So, reluctantly, I give her a goodnight kiss on the forehead, turn off the lights, and let myself out, but not before staring longingly at her belly, knowing that we have a child growing inside there. A child I shouldn't want to want. It's becoming harder to convince myself that I'm still that same non-father material person who met her in the elevator a couple of months ago.
Chapter 19. Jenna. At 4 weeks pregnant, it's time for my first prenatal appointment. I wait patiently as the nurse checks my height, weight, pulse, blood pressure, and temperature, then takes blood and urine samples. I already gave a complete medical history the first time I came here, but she asks me the entire survey again, with bonus questions about Emmett, until I've recited what feels like every cough and headache our families have ever suffered for generations. Finally, she hands me a paper gown.
"Change into this and lie on the table, please. The doctor will be in shortly to do your pelvic exam."
Then she leaves me alone for the first time in almost an hour. Phew. I knew when I started trying for a baby that I was signing up to become a lab rat, but this level of scrutiny will take some getting used to. And I'll be repeating it more and more frequently until the day I give birth. Hopefully next time won't be so intense, now that we've established a baseline for my health. I unfold the paper gown, cover myself the best I can, and lie down just as someone knocks on the door. "Come in," I call out. Dr. Carr bustles into the exam room.
"Nice to see you again, Miss Porter. How are you?"
"I'm fine. You?" I reply automatically.
"Good, good."
She washes her hands at the sink before joining me near the exam table. Unfolding the paper that's covering me, she explains her movements as she goes.
"Now, I'll just check for lumps here."
She squeezes my breast and I wince slightly.
"Tender?"
"A little. I assume that's normal." Yes, but still, I apologize. Moving much more gently, she continues interrogating me as she works. Do you smoke or drink? I've never smoked. I used to have one or two drinks occasionally, but I stopped as soon as I knew I was pregnant. She hums an approving murmur. Exercise? I go to the gym twice a week. Or I try to, anyway. Hopefully a tiny bit of exaggeration isn't a medical sin. Besides, sex is a form of exercise, right? Feet in the stirrups, please. I'm just going to take a look at your cervix. Will you bring me back a souvenir? I joke as I prop my legs up. She gives the tiniest possible huff of polite laughter. Ideally, I'll find nothing there. Now, you might feel a slight pinch. Lies. All lies. It feels like she's digging around for buried treasure, and I resist the urge to flinch. Ow. Is it really necessary to crank that thing open so wide? While she pokes and prods around, she asks, Any significant source of stress?
Well, a person in a lab coat is currently barking questions into my vagina, so...
I've been having some trouble with work lately, but nothing unusually stressful. Trying to keep the lit apothecary afloat has been an adventure right from the word go. Oh, yeah, and figuring out what the fuck I'm going to do about Emmett. I still don't have a good answer to that one. For the sake of my sanity, we've kept sleeping together, and he gets my hopes up by doing sweet things like texting me things he's researched about the pregnancy, even when he doesn't have to. But all that has to end eventually, right? Hell, I don't know. And I don't even want to think about it. What's that saying? Ignorance is bliss? In this case, ignoring it has been bliss, so I'm just going to keep on ignoring the situation between the two of us. I breathe a subdued sigh of relief when Dr. Carr finally finishes and steps outside to let me get dressed. When I'm decent again, she returns and sits at the computer. She scrolls down for a minute, skimming the nurse's notes.
You mentioned that your partner's grandfather died of cancer. Do you know what kind? And how old he was?
I glance at the typed packet in my lap. I interrogated Emmett about his medical history in anticipation of this visit, but I'm drawing a blank. Sorry, I don't. She frowns over her glasses at me.
All right.
She swivels around to the screen for another minute, then back to me.
Have you noticed any problems or irregularities since your last period?
I shrug. None that come to mind. I felt pretty great. She blinks owlishly behind her thick lenses.
Really? No nausea, heartburn, fatigue, dizziness, headaches, mood swings, constipation, spotting, cramping, trouble sleeping, food cravings, or aversions?
I shake my head at most of the symptoms she rattles off. Nothing except for maybe a little fatigue and, an increased libido.
Excellent.
She favors me with a rare smile.
It seems pregnancy suits you.
I grin back at her. I hope so. What comes next?
We're going to perform a pelvic ultrasound. Would you like to hear your baby's heartbeat?
I give her an enthusiastic nod. An ultrasound tech wheels in a machine, and Dr. Carr stands back as the screen soon comes to life with a blurry, black-and-white image of a bean-shaped baby, and the best thump, thump, thump noise I've ever heard. Tears fill my eyes as I watch the screen in wonder. This moment is even more than I ever dreamed it could be. God, how I wish Emmett was here, holding my hand, seeing what we've done.
Everything looks perfect, Miss Porter, the ultrasound tech says as she finishes.
You and your baby seem to be in perfect health, Dr. Carr adds. Speak with the receptionist to schedule another prenatal checkup in 4 weeks.
Oh, that's such great news, I say on a relieved breath. I didn't even know how much tension I was carrying until I got to see the baby with my own eyes.
What questions can I answer for you?
Dr. Carr may be on the brusque side, but she knows what she's doing and takes me seriously. Do you know when I'll be due?
Oh, right.
She pulls out a calendar and consults it.
I estimate your due date to be in mid-August of next year. We'll refine that estimate as we get closer.
She holds out her hand.
If I haven't already said so, congratulations. I'm happy for you.
Beaming, I shake her hand. Thank you. As I step out of the building into the thin, wintry sunlight of late afternoon, I pull out my phone to call Emmett. "The doctor said everything looks great," I tell him.
"That's wonderful news," he replies,
sounding genuinely enthused, and I can't hold back a giddy grin.
"What are your plans for the rest of the day?"
"I was going to drop by the mall and check out what their baby stuff is like, and then figure out dinner." I unlock my car and get in.
"Want some company? I'm still at work, but I was thinking of calling it a day soon, and there's nothing to do at home."
I should seriously think about this, but fuck it. "Sure. Meet me by the food court entrance?"
"I'll be there in half an hour. I just need to wrap up here."
"Okay. See you soon." I hang up and head downtown. Emmett meets me right on time, and together we stroll through the mall to an adorable baby boutique I've never let myself enter, not wanting to get my hopes up. "Now remember," I warn him as we enter, "you're not allowed to tell me what I should or shouldn't get."
"Got it. No opinions on anything."
He mimes, zipping his mouth shut and throwing away the key. I smile at that, appreciating his ease at letting me do things my way and call the shots. Pausing by a shelf of crib blankets, I pick up one to stroke the cloud-soft fleece and consider its pattern of dove-gray geometric stripes. "Oh, cute," I muse. Emmett looks over my shoulder.
"I like it."
Forgetting I'm not supposed to care what he likes, I glance back at him. "Really?"
"Yeah. We don't know if we're... I mean, if you're having a boy or a girl, so it's good to get something gender-neutral. Though I'd have a hard time choosing between this and that one."
He points at a buttery cream-colored blanket. I examine it and find myself in agreement. "Yeah, they're both such good colors." "Darn, you've made my decision harder," he chuckles.
"Sorry."
I don't know why, but something tells me it's going to be a girl. Still, though, it's good not to color-code everything. I grew up surrounded by so much pink, I hated it on principle until I was a teenager.
"We could buy blue just to fuck with people," he suggests.
I laugh. No, it's not worth constantly explaining the joke to people. He grabs another blanket. This one's striped in seafoam and olive.
"What about green?"
"Stop giving me more good options or we'll be here all night," I say with a mock groan.
"Are you going to find out the sex?"
"Yes, and... oh my God, I forgot to show you these pictures of the baby." I pull the black and white printouts from my purse and hand them to Emmett. His face twists in wonder and he blinks, a slow smile uncurling on his mouth.
"Holy shit."
"I know," I grin back. And I heard the heartbeat. Swallowing once, Emmett hands the pictures back to me.
"It's incredible, Jenna. I'm so happy for you."
As we wander through the store, examining and debating toys, strollers, clothes, furniture, nursery decorations, and every other kind of baby accessory under the sun, we find ourselves agreeing on almost everything. Our tastes line up perfectly. It feels so right, so dangerously good to run such a domestic errand with him, to act like parents together. I shouldn't let myself wish this was real, but longing floods my imagination and I can't fight the pull. I picture Emmett becoming part of my life, our lives, always nearby, smiling down at his newborn daughter as he cradles her tiny body in his arms, feeding her, playing with her together, rocking her, even changing her is all so cozy and welcoming in my mind's eye. It's love. It's home. I break away from Emmett in the stroller aisle, brushing off his concerned questions with a terse, "I'm fine, just need to pee," and hide in the restroom until I manage to bite back my tears. God damn it, I hate this. I never wanted to want any man so badly. I knew better, tried to avoid it, yet I've still fallen for someone who will leave me. And I can't do jack shit about it. I just have to wait, helpless, as every passing day brings the end a little closer. It takes a few minutes, but I try my hardest to calm myself down until I don't look anything like how I feel. Then I put on a smile and emerge from the restroom to rejoin Emmett, because I sure as hell don't want to waste what little time we have left.
Chapter 20. Emmett. As I leave work, I find a voicemail waiting on my phone. I expect it to be from Jenna and nervously check it, hoping that whatever she needed wasn't too urgent. But it's Aubrey, my older sister, who greets me. "Hey, little bro, I have a small favor to ask. Frank's mom fell and broke her hip, so he has to go visit her and see if she needs anything. He should be back in a day or so. Would you mind giving me a hand with the kids tonight and maybe tomorrow?" I call her back in the car, and she picks up right away. "I got your message," I say. "Of course I'll come help you out. I'll be there in half an hour." "Thanks. I owe you one." She sighs, and I can hear tiny voices hollering in the background. "It's no big deal, really. I didn't have any other plans tonight. Because Jenna doesn't need me, and what if she never needs me again? That's not a road I want to go down, and the thought of sitting around my penthouse all alone sounds like torture." I drive over to find her house in complete chaos, but Aubrey seems unfazed, so I guess this is normal. While she nurses and bathes baby Dustin, she puts me to work juggling a bored Kimberly, a cranky Elijah, and a giggly Brooklyn who takes off running at every opportunity. Now, mercifully, all three kids sit transfixed by a Disney movie in the living room, and all I have to do is bounce Dustin on my knee while Aubrey cooks a pot of chili for dinner. But it's still total insanity. "You were great with the little boogers," Aubrey comments over the noise of sizzling onions and ground beef. I snort. "I managed to stop them from killing themselves or each other, you mean?" She shrugs. "Sometimes that's plenty of work on its own, especially for four kids all under 6 years old. Still, I'd say you're a natural." "Thanks," I reply cautiously, sensing a trap. She dumps in cans of kidney beans and crushed tomatoes. "So, how are things going with Jenna?" she asks way too casually. And there it is. But before I brush her off with a cursory fine, I hesitate. To be honest, I'm totally lost here, and I could use some advice. What the hell do I say, though? In the beginning, I kept my arrangement with Jenna on the down low because we weren't supposed to ever be anything worth talking about, and now it's too late. I can't admit that she's pregnant because my family would just think I'm a total shithead for not immediately dropping down on one knee. But I can't make an honest woman out of her. Can I? Do I even want a serious relationship, let alone marriage? Does Jenna? All I know is I'm not ready to let go of her. It's only been 5 weeks, and she isn't even showing yet, but I can't wait to see her with a round belly and full breasts and know that it's my baby inside her. The thought of never kissing her again, never listening to her ramble about literature and history and philosophy, never spending another night with her beside me, never holding our baby in my arms, it's unthinkably painful. And it's all self-inflicted. I thought I could walk away unscathed. I had no idea what the fuck I was signing up for, and now all I want is Jenna and our baby. For the first time in my life, I want to stick around. I want to give her and the baby everything they need. I want to be part of their lives. I swallow past a dry throat, floored by the revelation. The loud movie and the sound of Aubrey's spatula scraping the pot fill the suddenly awkward silence. She half turns to look at me, her brow furrowed in concern. "Emmett?" I heave a loud, overwhelmed sigh. Maybe I can stick to half-truths. "I really like Jenna." Aubrey suppresses a smile. "Isn't that a good thing?" "I really don't know. I don't think I'm at all what she wants. What do I do?" "Well, I'd start with telling her how you feel," Aubrey says in a duh tone, leaning down to taste test the chili. I can guess why she sounds exasperated. She probably thinks my problem is just more of my typical aversion to commitment. And I can't even begin to explain all the ways this time is different. I'm not just being dense or immature here. We had that talk in the beginning, and she's already said she's not interested in a relationship. So what would be the point? I'd just humiliate myself and cut short what little time I have left with her. Aubrey hums thoughtfully as she roots through the spice cabinet. Look, I sympathize. Our parents' marriage was horrible, and the divorce was even worse. After all the stuff they put us through, I don't blame you for being skittish. She throws in a generous pinch of salt and another of pepper. But even though it's difficult, she abruptly twists to call over her shoulder, Sugar Pie, don't grab the kitty like that. It's not nice. Don't pet him if he doesn't want to be petted. Kimberly sulks away from the cornered cat, and Aubrey turns back to the bubbling pot. Sorry, what was I saying? How did she even see that? I was facing the right direction, and I still didn't notice what was going on in the living room. Guess it's true what they say about parents growing eyes in the back of their heads. You were explaining why I'm a coward, I replied dryly. Aubrey's 2 years older than me, so she remembers that whole ugly mess even better than I do. Yet she's been happily married for 10 years. She got over it somehow, and I just missed the memo. Although taking over Dad's job might have had something to do with it. You're not a coward. You were traumatized. She puts a lid on the pot, turns down the heat to simmer, and sits at the kitchen table beside me. I know it's hard and scary, but the best thing to do is follow your heart. Even if Jenna says no, it's better to find out how she feels than spend the rest of your life regretting the missed chance to speak up. She reaches out to cover my hand with hers. Don't let fear control you. Sure, people might make mistakes, but life means taking risks sometimes, and we should never stop living. My sister's words hit me right in the chest, and I drag in a deep breath. Into her earnest gaze, I can't reply anything, but, okay, I'll try.